You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Jeff Sykes. He is an amazing dancer who went to Juilliard with me. We overlapped a little bit and got to teach together in New Orleans on an outreach trip. His positivity and outlook on life and artistry lift me up, and I am very grateful to talk to him about his journey as a dancer. I hope you enjoy the fifth episode of The Compass.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, how do you keep yourself from going to the dark side as an artist?
I think it's having a physical practice for me being a dancer. I find that working out or taking class or even having a yoga class sort of really allows me that discipline, you know, to train my body at the same time every day. Mm-hmm. For some reason, just having that physical release really allows me to stay positive, because I feel like if I'm biomechanically sound in my body, then for some reason I can't hold tension there as much.
Yeah.
And it allows everything to circulate, which is good in a physical sense. And then mentally, it's just sort of like knowing that things kind of stink sometimes, and that's okay, because it's like everything waxes and wanes, and everything's an evolution, and everything's a cycle. And when you realize that everything changes all the time, and then you sort of are put in this place where, oh, anything could be created, even if it might be negative on the outside, but it's like using your perspective to make that enhance your future.
Like anything could end at any moment, but something could begin at any moment.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I've been having this like motto lately where it's like, if a door closes and you want to get in the room, just keep trying to open it, and eventually you're going to get in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. If you're persistent enough, you'll eventually get it. That's what I'm finding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just being patient in that cycle and not trying to rush things. Because, like, I'm really specific, you know, for all of my parts. And I go into a room, and sometimes it's like, oh, cool. I'm not part of this gang. Like, that's great. Cool. But then when I feel that I am a part of it from the other side of the like auditioner, it's like, oh, cool, let's jive. Let's do some cool dance moves together.
Right. Like we're talking the same language.
Yeah, like lingo. Because, yeah, I guess. Because it's like out of my control almost. All I can do is show up into the room. Because what I was doing before, I was like trying to figure out how to be successful. I was like, no, I already am successful just because I'm doing what I love every day.
Right.
I hope this makes sense.
No, it does. But you mean you just might not be the right match for the specific room you're in, but it doesn't mean that.
And that's okay.
What you're doing is wrong.
Yeah. Because you learn like what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Because it's like the audition, sometimes performers think that the audition is just one way and the casting director has all the choice, but you're auditioning them and you're auditioning the work and you're auditioning the material yourself. And if you're open that way and you actually are communicating and listening to the other side, then it's like, oh, that's when things start happening.
Right.
Because you're out of trying to impress people. You're just there to do the work.
And see if it interests you as much as they're interested in you as a dancer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then you're able actually to have like a real conversation rather than getting in your head and blocking yourself before you walk into that room.
Yeah. So having that like daily physical practice really helps you stay away from feeling lost when you're not working or when auditions are going badly or whatever.
Because it's something that I can put in my control. I guess that's why I really appreciate it, because it's my time. It's for me. It's not for anyone else. I walk into that room and I lift those weights or I do that dance class, you know, and it's for me and it's my time to sort of hone my physical tempo.
Yeah.
Which allows me to be a pure vessel when I need to, like being able to tap into that at a moment's notice, which I think is what all performers sort of strive for, being able to get into that sweet spot of creativity.
No, that makes so much sense. And it's a little harder, I feel like, for actors to stay on top of their game like that, because it's harder to work on your instrument alone than as an actor, as maybe it is as a dancer when you can do yoga classes or, I mean, that's good for actors too, but
yeah,
dance classes and, you know, you're not doing scene work with another actor kind of thing.
And also allows me to get out of my head.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I overthink things and that really brings me to the dark side. Like rule number one, like when you overthink things, it's just going to get shadowy. It's like break through that shade, just breathe. You know, something as simple as like taking deep breaths on that subway station. Like for instance, I had a very dramatic day in the spring. It was, you know, like when audition seasons and you have like a bazillion things to do in one day. Well, I went to this call and I got cut right away and I was like tragically devastated, you know, because I really wanted this. And then I was like, no, there's another audition in an hour that if I get my stuff together, I can go and have another opportunity to do what I love. So I like took a moment, like had my like hyperventilating moment, got my stuff together, then went to an audition and booked it.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? And it was like, oh, cool. That's all I needed to do.
Yeah.
You know, because see, if I would have overthought that first audition, I would have gotten in my way for the second one. Right. Rather than just like, oh, that's fine. It is what it is. I didn't get it. It wasn't because I wasn't the right type. It was just like, not my day.
Yeah.
Great. Because you know how sometimes when you leave auditions, people are like, well, I didn't get this because of XYZ. I have freckles, you know, I just have like
this look they gave me at this moment.
Yeah, or I coughed when I should have sneezed and I raised my hand when I shouldn't have had a question. And it's just, it's not that deep. Like sometimes things happen, you know? I don't know. I always want someone to get the job, you know? When I'm in the room, I'm like, I hope someone here gets this job. I hope it's perfect for someone.
Right.
I hope you make a lot of money here. Because it's not my thing.
That's so interesting to me, because for actors, they don't let you know if you don't get it. And for dancers, like, if you get cut the day of, right? If you make it to the end of the day, you have a pretty good shot of getting it, or you know you're in the running.
Yeah.
And for actors, they just don't let you know, unless you're the one who gets it a week later or something like that.
Ah, well, it's also, you guys don't have to audition in a group as much.
No.
We're always,
yeah,
we're literally cattle. Just like numbers and leotards. That's what I feel like I am sometimes.
So you don't ever get a chance to have that like one-on-one conversation.
Mm-mm. I mean, sometimes.
Which we don't either. Only if the director's really nice. Do they like make conversation before you?
But at least they hear you speak. They don't even hear us speak sometimes. You could get, I remember getting a job and the director had not even talked to me. He just saw me dance.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you know if I'm going to be a good employee?
Right.
Nope. Just care about how I move. That's great.
Right. Which in some ways is great. I love that you were so attracted to my dance, but
yeah,
how do you know if I'm going to be dependable or polite or
fascinating, right?
Yeah.
But I said yes, and I danced her.
Do you do choreography at this point in your career?
Yeah.
Have you been exploring that?
Uh-huh. I actually just did my first solo at Justin Church in the spring. It was part of Stuffed.
Okay.
Carly Eckert did it. She's it's a low budget, high visibility platform for artists in New York. And they actually have free food. So it's Stuffed. So it's like a meal and a show, and it's free.
Awesome.
And it's really great. They do a lot of like curatorial works in process. So that was my first professional like foray into it. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was actually really liberating. Because sometimes as a dancer in the contemporary scene, a lot of my choreography gets, I generate material for the people I work for. And then they put the stamp on the choreography. And it was fun to like have my choreography be my choreography and not someone else claiming it.
Right. That you own what you're doing.
Yeah. And that was really liberating.
Because I was going to ask if you're in that position of being the choreographer, like how you would change the audition experience or something like that. But you were just choreographing on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because right now I don't feel that I'm very interested in making work on myself because I don't want to bring other people into the studio if I can't compensate them. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, pretty much. And since I'm not in a capacity to do that, it's like, I think all my friends are beautiful dancers, but I'm not going to ask them to work for free. Because yeah. I feel that if you are at a certain level, like, you should be paid for your work. You know, you should be compensated, and it shouldn't be like, oh, I'll give you a spaghetti dinner if you come dance for me for 6 hours. It's like,
yeah.
For me, it's, I don't know, I'd rather work on myself and my investigation and see where that leads, try to get funding from that, and then bring in dancers. I don't know.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and that's very respectful of your peers.
Yeah, well, I just don't feel that there's a lot of respect, especially for dancers out there.
Yeah.
You know, because there was always someone younger who will do it for free or mm-hmm. will pay you to work.
I did a dance piece a couple of years ago with Lucy Baker, who's a Juilliard alum, and she was using 3 actor movers, mm-hmm. but she was so insistent on paying us an hourly wage for the rehearsals and the performances, and it was amazing because we went to school together, and I would have done it for free because I was excited to do something with her and to mm-hmm. kind of get to be a dancer, which is my secret dream. But I really respected the fact that she was so insistent on like, nope, this was my idea. This is a piece I'm asking you to do, and I'm going to pay you whatever small amount I can per hour because you deserve that. It meant a lot to me.
Yeah. And it makes you, I feel that if you invest in the people who are working for you, they invest more in the work.
Yeah.
You know, and for some reason, the art world is just living in this bubble that there's no business savvy or like consistency. It's like, oh, it's flighty, it's cool, it's casual, come. And then it's always super rushed at the last minute. You know, there's always that stress to get the show together. It's like, wait a minute. If there was more respect in the beginning of the process, then we could have used all of our time equally mm-hmm. rather than putting so much pressure for the week before the show. We would have been using that incubation time for that 3 months and been working with that respect from the get-go. Yeah. You know, and then it would be every second is precious in a creative process. It's not just like the last week that's important. It's like the whole time. And working with someone like Lucy Baker, who two thumbs up to you, Lucy Baker. I don't know. It's cool because you probably had a really great process in it because there was that level. There was like that electric spark of respect in the room mm-hmm. between director and vessel. Which sometimes, actually a lot of times in New York for the dance world, it's just not there. It's like we're expected to do, like go above and beyond almost. And like getting paid 9 weeks late, like no talk of a contract. We could be fired at any time. I don't know. It's just very strange. It always makes you feel like, oh, should I be auditioning for other things or should I stay here? Like, I don't know what's going on.
Right. Do you value me long term or should I?
Or am I replaceable?
Invest in something else.
Yeah. Because there's just not that business security that, I don't know, exists in like every sector that isn't the arts field sometimes. Yeah.
Because we have the Actors Equity Association, we have the union for some stage work. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have that at all?
We have AGMA, which is, a musical guild, but it's only if it's a union house. Like I'm dancing at the Met Opera this season. Mm-hmm. So like my contract is under AGMA But that's only very specific ballet companies or like the Met Opera.
Right.
You know, it's not...
It's not most of the stuff you're involved in.
No. But then there are organizations out there that actually are kicking butt administratively that I'm starting to find in the city I'm working for. And it's like, I just want to work for them more and more and more. Like... Third Rail Project in Brooklyn?
Yeah, Jenna Pollock told me about them. I still haven't seen their show or been to their classes, but I hear it's amazing.
Yeah, I've done some work with them this summer, and I'm hopefully continuing working them, fingers crossed. Anyway, but they have this really wonderful way of investing in artists in more than just their artistic skill set. They'll bring them in administratively, and they will put them in office hours if they can't. I'll give them a full-time salary based off of their performative needs, you know?
Hmm.
Like someone who's in Then She Fell will also be a part of finance or social media or rehearsal director. So they're able to put on two hats and get more compensation under the same umbrella. So the directors are actually reinforcing the strength of their cast because the people who are working for them feel safe and they feel like they are going to be used and they are being invested in. And that's why those performers are there for so long. And that's why their work is so rich. Because like when you create a vocabulary between director and performer, there's something that's special and beautiful and intimate. And if you keep developing that, it's like the relationship just keeps better, keep getting better. Like, I don't know. I see my parents and they're married for 35 plus years and their relationship just keeps getting better because they know the nuances of each other and they know them each other inside and out, and it's like that's the relationship you want to be building creatively. Like you know, like you don't want to feel like, oh, I spent like 2 months with this person, I spent like a week and a half with this person. I mean
that's all well and good, but yeah, you want to build these long-term creative relationships.
At least me I don't know.
They just get deeper and deeper.
Yeah,
I agree. But that's so cool that they're building this community where you're invested in the organization and they're invested in you.
Yeah. And also, I don't know. Even like how they audition, it's just wonderful. I felt like it was a workshop the whole time. You know, it's cool when you go to an audition and you feel like you are getting a skill set that is above and beyond what you have when you walked into the room.
Yeah.
And I don't think many places can offer that because it's all about like, who's hot? Who's fierce? Who has that look?
Right.
Or like, who are you?
But you spend so much time on auditions with no expectation of compensation or, you know, the small chance that you'll get the job. So that's great to feel like that you're getting something out of it, even if you don't book it.
Yeah.
Like and also like a class or something.
And also in the dance world, there's so many auditions that don't even have an end result. People just have auditions to get their name out there or for like a...
Really?
Yeah. They just like, I just want to build the relationship with people. And it's like, okay, I realize that. However, like... But
they're not planning to hire anyone or have a company or...
Mm-mm. Or they've already filled that position with someone that they met 2 years ago, blah, blah, blah.
Huh.
And they're just holding these auditions for visibility to get their name out there, to get people interested. And I don't know. I find that really shady. I mean... Would a business have interviews if they weren't looking to fill a position? They would say,
go teach a class at a studio and advertise it that way if you want to do that.
Yeah, but it's also like this weird dance culture in New York where like you give me $20 for class and I'll give you $25 for an audition and then you'll come see my show. So we all keep giving each other $25. And it's like...
Just trade off.
Yeah, and rather than, I don't know, like... trying to bring the art to the public.
Yeah, like, instead of just the community.
Yeah, I mean, the reason sometimes I think that the New York dance scene is so strong is because there's so many New York dancers who are going to see shows, you know, who are interested, who are creative, who are wonderful individuals, who I think are some of the most fantastic human beings I know. But, like, the structure that they're in, it's just, like, this suffocating... I don't know. Like this pool of incestuous. Oh, am I allowed to say that?
Sure. No. Say it.
No, but it feels a little bit like that, you know?
Like you're doing your work and then it's also part of your job to see these 10 shows this week or whatever.
And like I'll see my friend do this or I'm interested in working for this person, so I'll go see their show and show my face. Right. It's like a, it's almost very Game of Thrones-y. Like, I play this game, you play that game. Yeah. And it's just very strange. I'm like,
yeah, we have that in the theater world too.
Isn't it frustrating?
Yeah. A little bit? The social part of it. Sometimes you just want to stay home.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes life happens.
You have to play like the social game a little bit.
Yeah, and it's like, and you have to be, it's I tiring. Don't know. Yeah. It's, it's fascinating. Yeah. But then I also realized that, like, I feel that I'm part of, and as are you, part of like a generation of artists who are figuring out the system is flawed a little bit, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to make your own way in it, you know, and figuring out your own opportunities for yourself rather than trying to go into the same conventional system. Because it's like, I don't know.
There's so many middlemen in that system, I feel like. Mm-hmm.
And which is fine. I mean, that system is great. I love being entertained. I think it's great for the people who it works for. You know, and that's kudos. But I think for me, it doesn't work for me. I find myself very frustrated in that system. So I'm glad that I'm able to make opportunities and to be being exposed to these different ways of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and making work and how to make work and why the making of work is important.
And how to get it to an audience mm-hmm. in a different way.
Yeah, because a lot of times art is only for the artist. And I don't know. I look at Bach, and he's one of my favorite composers. And he, mostly all of his commissions were for wealthy donors.
Or for the church, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh yes, yes, yeah. Yes. That's what I meant. Yeah. So, but like, even back then, it was for, like, the church was his audience, and he had to create work for that audience. And I don't know when it became all about us and all about our internal struggle and all about like darkness. Huh. It's like, I don't know. I just long for Gene Kelly on stage. Like just seeing that, like having, like allowing the audience to be transported into a hyper reality where they forget things and they're allowed to shed some baggage and they come out a little lighter. You know, I think that's one theatrical experience. I mean, there's also ones where it's like you're thinking a lot and you're really challenged, which is great. But that's really hard. That's really hard to get into if you don't want to say yes when you sit down in the seat. If you're trying to be impressed by the thing that's on stage, you're like kind of curious and you get turned off by some cerebral high-end avant-garde art piece of art that's not really.
Well, and I feel like the joyful.
Yeah.
Thing that you're talking about is often kind of poo-pooed by critics.
Mm.
Oh. Because they think it's kind of lighter or like not as serious as the other stuff.
Yeah.
But it can be just as valuable. Yeah, to be uplifted by something than to be in the really serious I'm making art place.
Yeah, I just find that.
I mean, I like both, but
I like both too. But sometimes I feel like the world is so dark.
Yeah.
That's like we need to let a little light in.
Yeah.
Like there needs to be a little more celebration of beauty. I mean, there's so much destruction around us and it's so easy to tap into that hypersexualization of like I'm hot and that's interesting.
Especially in dance, I'm sure. Oh,
yeah.
Since it's a physical
thing. And it's so easy to pass that line and like succumb to like hypersexuality. But for me, that sexualization is just creative energy that hasn't moved up your chakra system. So it's like, just transmute that and make it a little more wholesome and true.
Because
like, everything's about sex until the sex happens, and then it's not about sex, it's about power. And it's like, I don't know, if art's always about power or sex, like, where's the purity? Where's like the dimension to it? Where's the subtlety? You know? I don't know. As an audience member, I like being invited into a world rather than being told that this is the world and this is what I'm supposed to swallow. You know, curiosity will always make me more interested than blatant, here I am, break right. through the fourth wall. No, I don't. It's like a whisper is more inviting than a shout.
Yeah.
In my perspective.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your parents earlier. Are they Do they have any artistic leanings, or how do they relate to this career you're involved in?
By being the most supportive, wonderful parents in the world.
Yeah.
And trusting in me and always saying yes and being there when I'm sad and feel like crap and just not telling me anything really, but just being there to support me and just always having a text saying, so proud of you, thinking of you, you know. And my dad was a athlete all throughout high school, so he's very physical. He's a black belt. He does cycling with my mom right now. So he's always been very physical. So I think that's, and he was a baseball coach.
So he can relate to that.
Yeah. So like the dance. Yeah. The athleticism.
Right.
He can really understand that. And then my mom is very creative and nurturing and is so crafty. Like, she's just so crafty. And so having those, like having a super athletic and a super creative parent who are both super supportive and put their children first. Like, I'm realizing as I'm coming to my late 20s how fortunate I am to have parents who went, we're going to give our children everything that they need in order to be successful, and we're going to put them first, and we're going to put them in activities that are expensive, and they're going to be able to do those activities, you know?
Did you start dance at a very young age?
Mm-mm. I started when I was 16, which is relatively late.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of danced my whole life, you know, just like hip hop. I always had a rhythm, did theater, but I didn't start training classically till I was 16. I had an urge of my theater camp director. I was like, you need to dance. He's like, okay. And then I got to.
And then you really needed to dance.
Yeah. And then like, I just sort of.
This is it.
And then Center Stage was out.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, these kids are cool. That seems fun. I want to dance in Red Point shoes. And then I went to boarding school in North Carolina, North Carolina School of the Arts. Uh-huh. I spent two years there in their ballet department, and then auditioned for Juilliard and was like, gotta do it. I actually auditioned for Juilliard twice. I didn't get in my first year. I know.
But then you did.
Yeah. I worked my butt off because, like, this is the place to be. Thanks, Juilliard. Yeah. For some reason, I had it in my mind that if I wanted to be a dancer, I had to go there.
Center Stage. Well, that was ABT, but they used the Juilliard building, so they like subtly messaged you that you should be at Juilliard.
Yeah. Well, it's in the Lincoln Center area. Yeah. You know, it's just that whole place. It's magical.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful that your parents are so supportive.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be hard for families to understand the culture that we're in or the demands of this career.
And I like my parents because they don't try to understand. They just support, you know.
That's
and I
great.
And I talk to them and they're interested and they come see my shows and they're supportive. But I don't know. There's something where, like, their love for me is not because I'm a dancer. It's not because I'm this or that. It's because they love me, and that supersedes anything that I could accomplish.
So they're not putting the pressure on you to accomplish certain milestones.
No, they just want me to be happy and to be taking care of myself.
That's so wonderful.
They're like, you have your four walls, a roof, food, and you're still smiling, so that's all you really need, you know.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been doing for like day jobby kind of things outside of dance?
Oh yeah. I've been working in the wonderful area of boutique fitness. I'm a trainer, and I've been.
Have you been doing that since school?
No. Mm-mm. This is a recent development. This is like 6 months. I started in January. I realized that in order to be safe in this city, I needed to be financially independent in a field that was outside of my art form.
Mm-hmm.
For my sanity and also for my creative development. So I got this job training, and now I'm able to do whatever project I want, you know, and it's okay if I get paid late because I am making enough money from this job, you know, and that's a very different standpoint to be in your life. Because when you have that comfort and security already figured out, it's like other things fall into place. It's like, yeah. I audition better because I do not have to stress about money as much. I have better meetings because my mind is not worried about what I'm going to have for dinner or what's in my fridge or how many meals can I get out of a ramen pack? You know, like I'm able to feed myself better and am able to take care of myself and take more classes and read more books and go to museums and see movies and
feed your creative side.
Yeah. And at first I was like just really excited to have money in my bank account. And then I was like, oh, I'm actually taking a step back and getting out of this tortured artist mindset where everything is wrong and everything is a struggle. And it's like, no, when I do my art now, it's a joy because I choose to do it. And yes, I do have a job outside of that, but it's physical and I help the world be better because I'm like teaching people how to use their abs and stand up stronger and get their heart rate up and feel good about themselves. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Like people don't know what freedom being physical gives you, you know, and to give someone who does not feel confident in her body, telling her that she is strong because she's lifting 12 kilograms of weight through the air at a quick tempo. It's like she feels dynamic and awesome and like an athlete. And that's strength. And I think that strength is one of the best things you can have. And it comes from within. It's not because she's lifting that heavy weight. It's because she chose that she could lift that heavy weight. And I think that's cool. Because it's all about mindset.
Yeah.
All about mindset. Like you always need to make your internal monologue serving you. You know what I mean? Because we get in our way and we always say we could be this or we could do that or XYZ. But it's like, no, you just need to be strong in your mind and then things are going to, like, don't doubt yourself. Don't doubt yourself. If you want to get something, you have to believe in yourself. You just got to have the picture before you can make it work, right? Because a lot of people say, oh, I want to do this or, oh, I want to have a job. It's like, well, if you want to have a job, you're on the frequency of wanting. You're not in the frequency of having, you know? And if you believe that you are going to get a job that serves you and is like all of the things that you want on your bucket list, it's out there. It might take a while to bring it into your life or to make those right connections, but it's like you always want to be that arrow pointing forward.
Do you feel like you've always had that point of view, or is that something you've kind of developed since graduating? Or
I've always had that point of view.
Yeah,
I think that's why I got into Juilliard after 2 years of like classical training. And when I got into Juilliard, I was just like the bottom of the barrel. It was like, oh, you guys are really good at what you do here. Like my class was, my class was a bunch of phenomenal dancers who were beautiful and killing it professionally. Like, so great, so wonderful. And I got to learn from them. And rather than being like, oh, I'm the worst person in class, I was like, nope, I just have to spend more time in the studio after night figuring out how to fall to the ground or working on that solo or doing this. Because it was just my time of training had to be condensed into a shorter amount of time. And I recognized that. And it's like, I rolled with it rather than trying to fight it and make it a pity party about me.
Right.
Because no one cares. No one cares about your pity party. I know that's really sad to say, but...
No, but it's true.
I think the reason we're friends is because we bring each other up. You know, and we're always like, yeah, totally cool, what's up? Hey, it's not, oh, well, the world is wrong. It rained today, and that means that I'm not going to do this or this. It's like, no, it rained today, and I'm going to put on an umbrella, and I'm going to get my errands done. Mm-hmm. Like the world is full of accidents and things that go astray. But if you are able to react with that with like strength and just like a tenacity, like you're always going to find your way.
I love that about you. Your outlook is so positive. It's incredible.
Yeah, but like life does stink. Like,
no, I know.
I'm not like a... like
right, like you have to acknowledge that. You have to acknowledge what you're feeling. You have to acknowledge where you are.
But yeah.
But then to go back to that place of like, okay, that happened... and now I'm going to move forward.
Yeah, like...
that's incredible.
But my Ben and Jerry's reality sometimes is very real. And I take my minute, and I'm on that. And then I go, okay, time to wipe yourself up. What can I learn from this situation?
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. It's very interesting in my life. I find that every situation is trying to tell me something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I'm not listening, I just have the same situation coming up over and over and over again until I'm able to listen to that. And I go, oh, there's a pattern. And that pattern is me.
Learn that lesson.
Yeah. And once you realize that you're in control of a lot of stuff, like how you perceive, then things start to change.
Hmm.
You know, like this was a shift in me recently in auditions. Like I go into an audition now, I'm like, this is a conversation. This is a conversation between you and me to figure out if we can formulate a sentence. Does it make sense for each of us to be a participant? You know, and sometimes it rolls really well and sometimes it doesn't. But when it doesn't, it's actually fine because I'm still in the room. I'm still having fun. But I just realized it's not working. Rather than going into an audition going, I need to book this.
Right.
I need to have this. I want this better more than the other person in the room.
Or I just did something wrong. I didn't
show
them what they needed.
I'm more technically advanced. Or, I should have formatted my resume this way. And I should have put the... It's like, no. No, 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 no. Those are like you get lost in the details and you don't realize what actually happens in the room.
Right.
Because it's basically just a conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you were telling me though that sometimes you do feel like cattle and you're auditioning with a big group and like how do you make it into that conversation for yourself when you feel that way? Is it just about observing what they're teaching and you're like, well, this choreography doesn't speak to me? Or
yeah, well, it's also like
how do you take that power?
Like I've gotten jobs from open cattle calls, and it's realizing that you're a one voice in a very large conversation and you need to listen even more so that when you're being viewed, you are a clear vessel of the information that's being presented in the front of the room, you know, rather than trying to be the best in the room, I'm trying to be the truest to the form in the room.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to, because at least in dance, they always are saying the same corrections or saying what they're looking for. And tapping into that, you know, that's what I find sets me apart. It's just listening. Because they give you a lot of verbal cues. And you can listen by watching. You can listen by hearing. And you can listen by seeing other people dance. Because you can show someone a move. And everyone's going to have their own lens. Everyone's going to have their own lens of interpreting it.
Right. Especially in an audition.
Oh,
yeah.
They're
all thinking about a million different things.
But to know that your lens is being true is hard. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, it's a practice. It's a knowledge. Like, I take dance class a lot. I went to school. Like, I've worked a lot. I've worked on my craft a lot. I'm very serious about dancing. I love dance. Go dance. More dance. So I guess I'm like just trying to say all these wonderful things to get around a point. Like I try to be true and honest and like bring my light into the room and let that show rather than trying to hit the step. I try to embody it and like perform it, like really dance it, you know, like actually have fun in the audition.
Yeah,
because so many people are just so stressed. Like I am such a jokester in auditions. Like I just try to make the people around me laugh and I try to have conversations with people.
I think that's an amazing way to approach it.
I try to be friends with people. Like I just try to just because if I'm trying to compete with that other person, it just doesn't work. But if I'm like, hey, what's up? It's like, oh, you came here today? That's fun. Like, or like, I see my friends in audition. I'm like, oh, you want this job too? That's great. Cool. I hope I get it. Or something like trying to keep it light. So
I always kind of love it when I run into friends at an audition. We don't have to audition at the exact same time, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
But like if I run into them and we're both waiting to go in, it always kind of puts me at ease because we get to talk about our lives and like makes me feel at home before we each go in and do our thing.
Well, that's lovely. Sometimes in dance
you have to do it at the exact same time, which is awkward, but
no, it's lovely that you can do that. But sometimes in the dance world, it's like people, when you see them in an audition, you see them like every 3 months and you don't really have any urge to have a real relationship with them, so they just try to interview you and pump you for information.
What have you been working on?
Yeah, or who's dancing with that company? Oh, did you hear this? Or did you hear that? Oh, did you get a call back for that? And it's just like, Oh my goodness. So like I just got a crock pot and I made pulled pork for the first time. It's really good. I had like 6 cups of apple cider vinegar in the pork. It was, like, you know, like that's the type of stuff that.
Yes.
That's the stuff
that I want to hear about. Like yeah. Let's have conversations about real life instead of the business.
Yeah. Cause it's, I don't know. Sometimes talking about the business in that way is a big time to get into the dark side. You know, that gossipy info thing. Like I actually like being ignorant of like companies' comings and goings, or if a director is a total jerk, like I don't want to know sometimes the anecdotes about like why this person left in a huff or why this person was this, that, or the other. Because there's always 3 sides to the story. There's her side, his side, and the truth. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just that gossipy culture that's been pervading. I just find it really unhealthy because I hate knowing information about someone that I haven't seen. And then I see them for a while and it's like, oh, I already know what you're going to tell me. Or I know that you had this event that happened and it was really embarrassing for you. Because it's just weird.
Right. But it's not based on your experience with them at all.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's actually true. It's just like ballet bar jargon. Hmm. Like you see someone before a ballet class and like, oh my God, did you see that person? They left the company. And it was... It's like, really? Like, that can't be true. And then you leave and you dance and then you have, like, this really bad seed in your head where it's like, oh my goodness, there was a very dramatic event happening. And it ends up being, like, a super casual thing where, oh, sorry, I didn't get the email. Like that. Is this making any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just don't like knowing that about that gossip. Like, I really try to separate myself from it because I don't care.
Yeah, that can be poisonous.
Yeah, I mean... Business is business. And I think that if you have an uncomfortable relationship with someone, then learn from it. You don't need to air that out all the time.
I love that you talk about it as business and you talk about yourself as an employee.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's so easy to blur those lines in the arts of being like...
Well, that's because remember that respect thing we were talking about earlier?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't view art as a business, and it is.
Right. And I love that you approach it that way.
Yeah. And I think that art needs to be more business oriented in order to be successful. You know, dance makers who are successful today have a brand. They have a business. They know what their audience wants and they know how to get funding. You know, it's like ideals are all fine and good, but ideals don't allow your dancers to be their highest selves. It doesn't give them the ability to make smart dietary choices or get body work done or take class. It just sort of fills them in with feeling good that, oh, we're really achieving real artwork here and aren't we doing the real work? It's like, mm-hmm. No, all dance is good dance. You know, like when it comes down to it, it's expression of the human soul. And who are you to say what piece of art is better or worse? It's like, no, you need to create an environment for your dancers that they can be successful. That's where I view successful art now. And that's a shift since school.
They can live a decent life.
Yeah, that's a big shift from school. Because I would be like, oh, it's all about that work. It's all about the work. It's all about the process. And I'm like, it's about the process. It's about the work. But it's also about how you're treated in the work. Because mm-hmm. if you're not able to have a real life outside of your work, you know, if you're not able to go out to dinner, or you're not able to grab a happy hour, or you're not able to take a yoga class, or afford a train or plane ride home, then you're living on a level that's a struggle. And how are you supposed to uplift society from your art if you're always in that struggle? You know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I had to grip with and that was a bitter pill for me to swallow. Because it's like, no, I'm struggling because I'm making sacrifices for the work and that's what you're supposed to do. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. And I think that's why it's a cycle. It's a really unhealthy cycle. And I want to break it. I don't know. I don't think that there has to be good. I don't think that there has to be this formula of good work is poor paying and bad work pays
well.
It's really
commercial and pays you a lot of money.
I think there's a lot of really great commercial stuff that is killing it. Like, some stuff that they're doing out in LA in music videos, I think is spectacular. I think it's wonderful. I think the stuff that they're doing on Broadway, like, especially with American in Paris or On the Town, I think those are wonderful shows. And yes, they are commercial-oriented in a Broadway facet, but those dancers are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they have such great clarity in their body. And, like, it's entertaining to watch.
Right.
And I don't think that that is any different than something that is being presented at BAM Next Wave Festival. You know what I mean? Because I was presented at BAM Next Wave Festival, and I couldn't afford dinner on my opening night. I had to borrow money from my roommate in order to go to the deli to buy a peanut butter and jelly bagel. But I was being presented at BAM Next Wave. Like, that, it's interesting because you think, when I was in school, I was like, oh, anything that's being presented at BAM, like, oh, you're just going to be getting money.
Yeah, they'll, like, obviously be paying you a fair wage.
And it's just like, I was there and I was like, oh, that was a ha-ha moment. I was like, oh, it's not what it seems like from the outside. Like, right. this is real, and this is sad that I'm at. And it's no one's fault. Like, I'm not blaming anyone. It's just, I realized at that moment that I'm making a choice to be in this situation. And this is not a situation that's allowing me to be me. It's putting me in a very dark place. Because when you can't afford food, you're putting yourself in a dark place. You know, and I think a lot of artists always want to be working and they always want to be doing a project. And, like, what I did this summer is I took a step back. I went, what do I really want out of life? What do I really want to do? I want to be happy. So I need to take myself out of situations that are making me unhappy. Even though from the outside perspective, when I have a conversation with someone, it sounds like I'm successful. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's a difference between having a successful conversation with someone and feeling like crap on the inside and having someone who's kind of unimpressed with what you're doing, but you don't really care one way or the other because you are fulfilled in it yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just fulfilled right now. You know? And it's really great because I feel really open. Yeah. And I didn't feel that way before. But I felt like I had to stay in a position, and I don't know. I took responsibility for myself and realized, and the situation that I was in is wonderful for some people, and they're making it work, and their realities, like, jive with it, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. For me, it didn't work, and I tried to force myself into that system, and I wasn't allowing myself to be unhappy in a situation where so many people wanted it.
Right?
Does that make sense? And I was miserable, and I felt. Crappy for being miserable because I was like, so many people want to be here.
Right.
But I didn't allow myself to go, well, you don't want to be here, Jeff. So that's all that matters. It's like what you want.
So now that you're out of that situation, you feel like you can build your life from the ground up for what you want.
Yeah. And I also think that without that situation, I would not be where I am. So I wouldn't know what I want. And I'm actually
it was an experience that you needed, but now you're out of it.
And I'm grateful for that situation. Good. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm grateful for pretty much everything that's happened in my life because it's allowed me to have a perspective. You know, that's the great thing about the past. It gives you perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, yeah, it's fascinating when people don't realize that and they let the past constantly influence their future. Because if you think about it, you're always creating your story, and your story is like what you add to that narrative, and it's what we're adding right now. Like, we're adding to each other's stories. Like, we're adding to a reality. But we could be creating a very different reality if we choose to have a different perspective. You know, if we were bringing that outside world in with us today, or
this is like a commentary on our experiences.
Yeah, and I don't know. I guess I'm just choosing to make my story better. I don't know.
It's amazing.
We just want more, right? It's like that commercial, the T-Mobile commercial with the little kids. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay. If you weren't, we were going to have to YouTube that later. I was like, okay, we'll do that.
No, because we really got to know each other when we were teaching.
Yes.
At Juilliard in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And like, have you done a lot of that kind of like teaching and outreach stuff since school? I haven't. I want to get back into it now.
I want to get back into it too. And I'm actually in talks with some organizations to be working with that sort of on the ground level.
Mm-hmm. Like get back into it.
Yeah. But I found myself having to be a little more selfish because now I'm responsible for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of money to do that type of work. I mean, it's
no, it's almost always volunteer.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's volunteer, and then you also have to put your life on hold and be able to sort of keep your life going when you leave, especially living in New York City, because it's just bananas here with how much money we pay.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad to say I'm not involved in things like that.
Okay, I was just curious. Yeah. Okay, well, we both want to get back,
yeah,
back involved with,
well,
that.
Well, because I feel like that's one of the most important things as being an artist is giving back to young people or just the community where they wouldn't, like putting art, yeah, in unexpected places, because that gives people just that memory of art and it makes art real to them. It doesn't make it something that they learned in a textbook. It makes it real. It makes it tactile. You know, like all those performances we had in that construction site or at those public schools, like that put art in their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And it made them see it up close and personal. And it can never be erased. And we expose it to them, and it's always for that. And I don't know how those students interpret it or what my students in the literacy program at Juilliard I was involved in, like what they're doing now, but I know that I expose them to something. And, you know, maybe I plant a seed where it'll germinate into something pretty cool. But I don't know. I don't know. But I was glad that I was able to there to make an impact. Do you know what I mean? Oh,
yeah.
But I have been doing a very cool outreach program at Lincoln Center.
Really?
Yeah, with former alums Jenna Pollock.
Okay, I think she told me about this, but please.
Donald Borer and Grace Song.
Yeah,
we did
talk about it.
Donald Borer was commissioned to do a program for young children, introducing them about ballet and dance. And he took divertissement music or scenic change movement from Sleeping Beauty and made Brothers Grimm fairy tales out of it.
Oh, cool.
So we did a Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, Hansel and Gretel. And he talked about pantomime and he was in the narrator of it. And he had like a slideshow and we had different props. Like I was the wolf and I had a little mask. And then, aww, I was the prince and I had a cape with the crown. And we taught the children about dance and how to express your feelings through movement and how to use your body to express emotions so they
That's
could.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was actually amazing because I saw, after being a part of the show for a year, I went to see ABT a couple of times this spring season. I had a friend in the show and I was like, oh, this is what ballet pantomime is. I can actually follow it. Cool. I know what's going on
Who
now.
Who were the kids? Like, how did the audience wind up at the show?
They were bussed in. It was part of their...
like school groups?
Yeah. Awesome. So it was field trips. Lincoln Center has this great educational outreach component, and schools sign up for it. And they have awesome teaching artists that go into the schools and talk about what they're going to do in the performance, and the kids already knew about dance and the Brothers Grimm, and it was great, you know, and that was really, really powerful. And hearing them be like, what's your favorite dance move? Do you like being the wolf? Or what my favorite question was, these are my bangs. And that was the best. I don't know. It's like dance is like a unicorn in reality. Like you don't, yeah, really meet that many dancers. You meet a lot of former dancers.
I definitely believe that you're a unicorn.
Yeah, but like,
it's an amazing thing.
I just want more dance out there. Like, if you're out there listening, just do a little dance party. Just put on.
I really wish that dance, like social dance, were still,
yes,
a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, people go to clubs and dance at weddings and stuff, but like partner dancing, like social ballroom dancing, just like casual dancing with a partner, it's not really a thing anymore.
No. It's
and
not.
I really wish it were. It's so much fun.
Yes.
And it gives people this physical way to relate to each other, in this social setting that is lacking.
It puts something special in the air.
Yeah.
Because when you go to a club, like, first of all, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything, and you can't move, right? Mm.
Or if you are dancing with someone, it's very sexual and, like, grinding or whatever.
Or twerking.
Or twerking.
That's what our generation is known for.
But, like, I was lucky enough, like, when I was a young teenager, there was the guy at my friend's church who was a retired Arthur Murray instructor.
Oh.
And he did a whole ballroom dance class every Sunday for this whole group of homeschooled teenagers. And it was great. And so we all got to learn to dance together. My brother and I ended up swing dancing together for years, and it really, like, saved our relationship. And it was so much fun to have something like that to do with your friends, where, like, you all know the secret code and you can work together to do this cool thing.
It's community.
Yeah.
And it's joy.
I wish I had that.
Like, in ancient cultures, a lot of them didn't have a differentiation between music and dance. They had the same word.
Hmm.
So, I don't know.
But now it seems like you have to be a trained dancer like you to dance. Like, people, just normal people, don't always allow themselves to dance.
Well, I think it's because a lot of people have the perception of themselves dancing, and they're scared that they're going to look silly. When actually, whenever I see someone dancing, I usually am inspired to have fun because they're having fun and I want to have fun.
Yeah.
Like, as a dancer, I celebrate when anyone dances. And they're like, I always find it so weird when people go, oh, you're going to make me look bad. I went, no. What? Huh? No, we're just doing dance moves.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to find their life dancer within them. You know, like, being a life dancer, like, just always finding a groove. Because you dancing in your room by yourself to your iPod shuffle, what have you, is powerful. And, like, I have dance parties in my room.
No, me too.
Yeah. Put on some Beyonce. Whatever.
I just wish it were more of a normal thing.
I think that it is more normal.
Certain circles.
But I don't think that people talk about their underwear dance parties in front of their mirror.
Well, I'm not talking about the underwear dance parties. I wish it were more of, like, a normal social thing.
Yeah. I mean, I totally.
Unabashedly.
Yeah.
Because I would go dancing every single night.
I think I would too. That'd be so much fun.
It'd be great. Are there any things that, like, books or certain albums or movies that you turn to over and over again to kind of take yourself out of the dark side? Like, things that you find yourself rereading or listening to on repeat that kind of lift you up?
I've been listening to a lot of Aaron Copland.
Okay.
For some reason, whenever I listen to his music, I feel American. And I feel proud to be a dancer making work in America because it's a culture that doesn't celebrate the art form as much. It's not, like, culturally embedded in our society as it is in Europe.
Yeah.
So that's something that I don't know why I get, like, I feel safe when I listen to his music because it makes me think of canyons and open space and Martha Graham and, like, Agnes DeMille and these wonderful dance creators that are American, you know? And then a lot of Rumi poetry that always makes me feel great because it's simple, it's lovely, it's about nature, and it's real. And I've been watching a lot of, like, dramatic things on HBO or Netflix, like television series. I've just been really getting into that. I just finished Sense8.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't watched it yet, but
I find that really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm just really interested about the human condition. Like, Orange is the New Black was really great. I just really like both of their programming. I think it's really interesting. It's out of the box. It's not conventional. I feel like I can never find those story arcs.
There's so much good stuff on TV right now.
Yeah, I like getting lost in a narrative because I really like relating to a character for some reason. Whereas before I used to be very interested in watching things. Mm. I think because I was a little bit more of a narcissist back in the day. But now it's, it makes me feel a little less weird when I see someone going, when I see a character going through a struggle. Yeah. It makes me deal with my troubles more easily because I empathize. Like it allows me to be empathetic to myself and also to my friends. Because I feel like I'm, I feel like with television, especially with what's being created now with such great, unique programming, like House of Cards, like just like blew my mind, you know? And I really felt a real raw emotion watching like Kevin Spacey going through this sick world. And that, I don't know, it was great to feel something while watching my computer.
Because I know for me, sometimes like seeing a dance show, like seeing something other than my specific medium,
mm-hmm.
is more inspiring to me than seeing a play. Like yeah. seeing a dance, I'll be so much more inspired for some reason at certain points. So I wonder if it's the same sometimes, like seeing a story told in a different way than dance.
Yeah.
Can like take you out of your own sphere.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. A lot of my friend of mine, Dominic, he... wonderful dancer. He was saying how he, whenever he goes to see a dance show now, he's in a bad habit of falling asleep. Which I find really interesting.
Huh.
Just because it's like sometimes you become, within your art form, you become so jaded to it.
Yeah.
You can't even appreciate it.
Or you're picking it apart or yeah. whatever it is.
Or also the art that you're seeing on stage might be, I don't know. Do you ever find that sometimes you're watching stage and you're like, okay, I know you're technical. Like, I know you got the chops. But why? Why is it? why is this going on? It yeah. seems so derivative. And it's like you already need to be in the club in order to understand what's going on stage. And that seems backwards to me. Because didn't we really try to bring art to the people?
Hmm.
And isn't that a thing? Isn't... like, without the audience...
like, you have to be in the club to
yeah.
understand it. Is there anything that you've seen in the last couple months that you'd like to recommend?
I would say go see Then She Fell.
Which I've heard.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And they're actually opening a new show, The Grand Paradise, in the fall. I would say go see that.
And that's with the Third Rail.
Third Rail Project. Mm-hmm. I would say go see any immersive theater. I would say go see it. I think that that is a great art form that is yeah. for today's society.
Me too.
I think that, especially with like everyone, I feel like everyone has their own avatar now with their cell phone. Like everyone has an extension of themselves. So they're creating a brand online. They have a social presence, what have you. I mean, I think people have an identity that's larger than what it used to be. And immersive theater allows the individual to be their star of their universe.
Hmm.
And I think that that places the audience in a powerful position because they get to choose what they want to see. And that's what they want. They want to choose. They want to have power. They don't want to be sitting in a seat being told what to look out. They're curious. They want to explore. They want to be shocked. They want to be inspired. They want to be curious.
They want to be involved.
Yes. They want to unlock it, you know, because the phone is so easy now. But when you're in an audience of Sleep No More, you have to fight to see the performers. You have to work to see the show. And that's a part of the thrill, the vigor of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think... of course, when I leave this interview, I'm going to have a million things to talk about. I would also say I recommend the Magicians trilogy. I forget who it's by, but it's like a post. It's like a real life Hogwarts postgraduate. Okay. It's very, very, very cool.
Wait, it's a show or it's books?
It's a book. Okay. It's coming out on Showtime. They made a show out of it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming to talk with me.
I had so much fun.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to The Compass
Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller. Music by Brendan Spieth. Audio assistance from Nick Choksi. And a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.